Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing, and I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. It is Thursday evening here in the DMV. Hope everyone is doing well. Kind of crazy weather here the last couple of days. Rain, wind, all that not fun stuff. But a lot of intriguing stuff going on still with the Washington Commanders in what's already been a very busy, impactful week. Firing the decision to let go of Ron Rivera. Josh Harris and his group have been very active with regards to the front office search, to the point that they have now cut the list down to two. They interviewed five candidates. The list is down to two. Adam Peters, assistant GM with the San Francisco 49ers, and Ian Cunningham, assistant GM to the Chicago Bears. Sources confirmed to The Athletic that is indeed where this team is at right now. And they even had their first virtual coach interview. So we'll get to all that here in a moment on the Standing Room Only podcast. Our guest today, Daniel Popper, who covers the LA Chargers for The Athletic. And if you're wondering, what are we doing here? Why are we talking to the Chargers guy? Well, a couple reasons. One, the Chargers are one of the teams that also, like Washington, is looking for a new GM, essentially, and a coach. Furthermore, there's been this sort of debate we've all been having with each other about what's going to happen with Lions' offensive coordinator, Ben Johnson. What's a better deal for him? Could he go to Washington, which, the blank slate situation we've discussed, or the Chargers when you have Justin Herbert? What's the better deal? Also, what do we think about these various candidates, Peters, Cunningham, the Belichick rumors, Jim Harbaugh? What do we think? So I asked Daniel to come on, and we went through scenarios for both teams and sort of the lay of the land, and just talked about the process. So a fun conversation, insightful one, that I'll get to in a few moments. Make sure, of course, you check, if you haven't heard them already, I had podcasts this week with Grant Paulson from 106.7 The Fan on the day that Ron Rivera was let go and Josh Harris spoke with the media. And then Nikki Javala from the Washington Post joined me as well to start digging into kind of where things go from here. So make sure to check out those podcasts wherever you do your podcasting. And I also wrote about some of the news of the day on The Athletic with my colleague David Aldridge, so check that out as well, in addition to the story I had kind of breaking down the Ron Rivera era for The Athletic. All right, so let's get to a couple of things. So as I mentioned, Adam Peters, Ian Cunningham, the final two. Now, they did interview three other assistant GMs, Eagles Alec Hallaby, Chiefs Mike Borgonzi, and the Browns Glenn Cook. They also, as far as we know, have asked to speak with Dallas VP of Player Personnel, Will McClay. There's no sense yet, though, whether that meeting is or will happen. So I guess if there's a world where he says he will meet with them, that a two-person race could become a three-person race. But I didn't include Will McClay in my original list of candidates, in part because it's just the feeling around the league is typically he's just not leaving Dallas. Jerry Jones takes care of him, their fans. He basically runs their front office, even though Jerry Jones has the GM title. So we're putting him aside, and obviously the team is moving forward with these two candidates. And I've written about both of them a bit. If you go look for my article about the 12 GM candidates, you'll see them both listed 1-2 in that story. I'm not going to pretend I'm unique in that regard. That's the way most of these lists are. Both very interesting candidates. Both have interviewed for jobs previously. Peters was mentioned a lot in my agent survey about Excellent talent evaluators and GMs to watch. Cunningham was offered the Arizona GM job last year, turned it down. But what's so interesting about this to me is, I mean, just in short order here, we have come to see this team go so far from the Dan Snyder era. Now, it didn't always, it felt like that back in training camp, right? Where fans came out, you guys were there, many, many of you on whatever days fans could come out. And, you know, we're there to support the team, to be proud to be a Washington fan. The season may not have always felt in that regard, especially after the losses started to pile up, right? We all kind of get that. But as I said when Rivera was let go, that this was really the start of the Josh Harris era. And the fact that they're able to even just get meetings with the people who are viewed as sort of the top candidates in the given cycle says a lot about how far this can go. You know, one thing that hampered Ron Rivera throughout was an inability to always get who he wanted for various positions, players mostly, but also maybe even on the staff, because of the Dan Snyder tax. You know, people didn't want to necessarily come work for this organization, and that became even more complicated as more time went on, and it became clear that Rivera was probably going to be let go, but then combined with the Snyder part, it was really a tough challenge. And if, in fact, they choose one of the two, and the candidate accepts the offer, you know, like I said, that's just wild compared to where things have been. Now, of course, none of that means they're going to have success. And I always like to note that, you know, for all the Dan Snyder negatives, he was able to get a lot of notable coaches here. Marty Schottenheimer, Steve Spurrier, Joe Gibbs Part 2.0, Mike Shanahan. You know, Jay Gruden wasn't at the you know, sort of championship level of those coaches, but he was one of the hot candidates the year he was given the job. And Ron Rivera as well, in terms of, like, you know, he had been to a Super Bowl. He was going to get other interviews. So it's not like they didn't before. Money does a lot. Money and giving power at times does a lot. We'll see what the end results here are in terms of contracts and power and things like that. But just getting these interviews, and not just these two, the other candidates as well are also, like, you know, among the more highly considered options this cycle. So says something a lot about the change in ownership and what people at least seem to think about the Josh Harris group. Now, the way these meetings work, from my understanding, is they met with three different people down in Miami at Josh Harris's home. They met first with former Vikings GM Rick Spielman, and then later they met with Harris and Bob Myers, of course, the former Golden State Warriors GM who just joined the organization as a consultant for Harris for this search and beyond. Spielman is here for the search. Now, beyond that, so now there's going to be a second interview, I should say, with Cunningham and with Peters. The expectation is that it will include the other members of the group, of the advisory group: Magic Johnson, Mitch Rales, and David Blitz are all limited partners with the team. So we will see where this goes. Now, if you make me handicap this, I've been talking to you for a while about how it feels that Adam Peters is feels like he's the front runner. Certainly, you know, there's been enough conversation about it to make me think it's accurate, especially since, as I said before, he's the guy that a lot of teams have been really interested in. So I don't discount Cunningham's chances. I don't know how the interview went. He's obviously, again, impressive enough. He's already been offered a GM job. So we'll see how it goes. If I had to guess, I think, like I said, it feels like Peters, it's, you know, has Peters in the lead, but we will see where that goes. And then, you know, it's off to the races from there in terms of the head coach candidates. And speaking of that, the Commanders had a virtual meeting today with one of them, Ravens associate head coach / defensive line coach Anthony Weaver. according to sources. Can't say I know a ton about him, but obviously the Ravens, their defense this year has been lights out. You know, anybody coming from that organization right now feels like it's, you give them an automatic stamp of approval. So I'm impressed with, you know, their candidates so far have been the ones you would expect to see. So, you know, kudos to them for that. Now, I don't, here are the rules, and I'm going to read from a tweet from our pal, Nikki Jabvala, who was here this week. She tweeted earlier, for candidates in the playoffs, only those with a wild card bye can interview virtually at this time. Those with the wild card games have to wait until 3 days after their game. And as I said before, in-person candidates cannot meet until the 22nd, or basically after the divisional round. So Weaver could interview because the Ravens have the one seed and a bye. Gives Washington a little bit of a head start on that. Eventually, whoever they hire as this front office lead will be part of the group, not the main decider, though obviously they're going to have a significant influence, you would think, but they will still be a decision by the group, Harris and others. So so that's where things are at right now with Washington. This thing is moving very fast. You know, my original guess was 7 to 10 days from the point that Harris let Rivera go. I think we're well on track for that. Obviously, you know, I imagine the league is probably tells teams, hey, I don't want you to don't do any league business during the playoffs. Let the games breathe. So, you know, whatever is going to happen presumably will not happen until next week. I don't know when the second interviews will be taking place, but they will be taking place. So really interesting times. And as I said, Daniel and I spoke more about these two, Cunningham and Peters, along with a bunch of coaching candidates as well. All right, let's get just, in fact, let's just go right to that interview. And then after that, I'll make some picks on these playoff games. I'll advise you to not follow my picks. They have not been great this year. But nonetheless, I'm going to do them because that's what we do. So here we go. My conversation with Chargers insider Daniel Popper, talking about, if, among other topics, if Lions OC Ben Johnson has a choice, should he pick the Commanders or should he pick the Chargers? We lay out the reasons why and why not, and a lot more here on the Standard Room Only podcast. All right, as promised, joining me here on the podcast, another guy who is in GM coach search mode as well, Daniel Popper, my colleague at The Athletic, covers the Chargers. You know, we kind of knew in Washington Ron Rivera was going to be gone, but your place was like, nah, we're not even waiting until the end of the year. We're just dumping Brandon Staley with like a month or so to go. Has he just been in coach GM mode pretty much since?
Yeah. I mean, it was, heading into the season, I had a good feeling that if things did not go well and they didn't win, as in like win a playoff game and make a real push for the Super Bowl, that this was probably going to be the end of Brandon Staley's tenure and also of general manager Tom Telesco. I don't think ownership wanted to make either of those moves until, you know, after the season. That's how they've always operated. They hadn't done an in-season move since 1998 when Kevin Gilbride was the coach. They typically like to, you know, finish the season out and, you know, have a full sample size and then sort of take their time and really go through things and digest what happened and then, you know, make a decision after they've sort of done that process to avoid any sort of knee-jerk reactions. But it got to a point where that Thursday night game in Vegas, national television, your biggest rival, you're down 63-7. You know, it's very clear that the team had sort of given up on Brandon Staley at that point. And I think ownership sort of looked at it and said, like, what are we really gaining out of letting, you know, both of these guys finish it out? We're better off, you know, making the move and getting sort of a 3-week head start as far as getting their strategy together as far as how they want to approach the GM and coach searches. So, yeah, since then, it's sort of been figuring out, you know, what sort of traits they're going to be looking for, how they're going to set up the power structure, who the candidates are. You know, we talked to president of football operations, John Spanos, you know, a couple of days after the firings and, you know, now obviously everything is heating up, as you are very much aware of.
Yeah. I mean, there's been some crazy scores this year. 63-7. I mean, and I know they made it 21, but like that's just insane. I thought the Miami Denver game, obviously with them scoring 70, Washington's had more traditional blowouts. They lost 45-10 to Dallas, and then the next week lost 45-15 to Miami. But let's see, those are cupcakes compared to 63-7, my
And then
lord.
you add in that the Ravens put up 56 with the likely MVP as their quarterback. The Raiders did it with Aiden O'Connell, a rookie. I mean, it was 42-0 at halftime. That had only happened twice since 2000. It was embarrassing. It was tough to watch, frankly, like to be there. Like obviously you're objective and you're not really like rooting for anything, but to sit there and watch a team just get crushed in that fashion, it was difficult to watch. And obviously, ownership was embarrassed enough where they felt like it had to happen at that point. I think with Brandon Staley, it was more of a like an acute thing where things really unraveled this year. The defense did not get to the place that they expected it to be. Despite having the quarterback and the talent, they were still losing a lot of these close games. For general manager Tom Telesco, I think it was more of a body of work, right? 11 seasons, only two playoff wins. I still think Tom Telesco is a good talent evaluator. But when you've gone that long and you haven't produced results, that's just sort of the nature of the business. So I look at him a little bit separately, but obviously, that Raiders game and how badly it went was obviously the tipping point, the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely want to come back to the coaches part and discuss which one of us gets Ben Johnson or not. But just to stay on the executive front, because today, obviously, Washington made some news, getting it down to two candidates in Adam Peters and Ian Cunningham. And I know you've been studying this, and I'd been putting together lists for a while, but when I see, I'm always like, okay, who am I forgetting? What's good buzz? So I pulled up your list at one point that you had up on the site, and like me and most everybody else, those are the two names that are pretty much at the top of every list. And it sounds like Cunningham, if it doesn't work out here, perhaps is in play at your place. What's been your sense from what you've studied, people you've talked to, whatever? What's your sense of Cunningham? Why is he such an interesting candidate?
Yeah, I think whenever you're looking at GMs, you're sort of looking at like where did they come up, where did they learn the business, and then sort of what's their background as far as organizations that they've worked in. The Ravens are, in my opinion, like the class of the NFL and have been a long time. Obviously, Ozzie Newsome's been there forever, not GM any longer, but still in the building and has groomed a lot of these candidates. So you look at Ian Cunningham, spent 9 seasons as a Ravens scout and then went on to the Eagles, another great operation mostly under Howie Roseman, obviously been able to build really good rosters there, very forward thinking. And so I think that's really what's made him most attractive this cycle is just that sort of background. As far as the Chargers, the reason I think he's sort of interesting for this job is like, let's say the Chargers do go out and get Jim Harbaugh. That's the name that obviously has been thrown out a lot. You hear it privately, you hear it publicly. He has a connection to the organization because he played there his final 2 seasons in the league in 1999 and 2000. He got his head coaching start at UCSD, University of California, San Diego. On top of that, a proven winner, success in the NFL, just coming off a national championship with Michigan. Obviously, like it's no secret that he wants to get back to the NFL and that, the last box to check is sort of winning the Super Bowl after what he did at Michigan this year. So you sort of start thinking, okay, like if you do hire Jim Harbaugh for the Chargers, who do you pair him with? Because that's the real key as far as making sure this works. Because it was working in San Francisco, and that very public falling out with Trent Baalke there is what ultimately, expedited, the end of his NFL tenure and ultimately the start of his tenure at Michigan. So you have to find somebody that you feel like he can work with. The one thing that I keep hearing is that among NFL circles, like the place to look is Baltimore and people that have a background in Baltimore. Obviously, the success of the organization, but obviously his brother coaches there, and that's where a lot of his relationships lie, his good relationships, the people that he's willing to work with. And so Ian Cunningham, having spent 9 seasons there, starting in 2008, which is the first year John Harbaugh was there, I think that connection makes a lot of sense. So you have the background that you're looking for. And then also if the Chargers do go in the direction of Jim Harbaugh as head coach, you could potentially pair those two up and they have some sort of rapport, because of that Baltimore connection.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, we were discussing a little before, but when people have mentioned Harbaugh as a candidate here, I just don't see it where he's going to be. We just finished this coach-centric model with Ron Rivera. Did not work out for a variety of reasons. You would almost have to do it again if Jim Harbaugh. I can't imagine he's like, he's willing to say, fine, somebody else can pick the groceries or whatever Parcells said.
Right.
Do you get the sense that the owners, that's what they want? Because it's been made clear that they do want to separate the positions after what happened. Do you have to consider exceptions, though, and Harbaugh might be one of those guys.
Yeah, it's a good question. I get the sense that ownership does not like the model of the head coach, serving two roles, being head coach and general manager. Like, I don't think that they believe there are a lot of candidates out there that can do what, for example, Bill Belichick did in New England. And even then, like, people argue, like, how well did that work over the last, 6, 7 years? I think he's still a good football coach, but I think the personnel side is always what was an issue. It's a lot of responsibility to put on one person. And so I think you could end up with a situation maybe closer to what San Francisco has with John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, where John Lynch is, obviously running the personnel department, but then you sort of have like a right of first refusal, final say type thing with Kyle Shanahan, where, that type of power structure might work. But I don't see it as a situation where they would hire a coach and give him two titles and allow him to, be the driving force in the personnel department while also being the head coach. I think they believe that's way too much responsibility for one person. You brought up Ron Rivera, and I wanted to touch on this, which is interesting. Like, I think that you juxtaposed Washington to what the chart where the Chargers are at. Like, Washington's coming off of, okay, they did hire a retread coach. They did hire a guy with experience who had a lot of success in Carolina, and that didn't work. And so they might be looking in an entirely different direction than the Chargers, where they're like, okay, yeah, we need an up-and-coming guy. We need somebody with new ideas. We need somebody that maybe will give us a fresh look at things, perhaps a coordinator like Ben Johnson. In the Chargers case, they haven't hired a retread coach with experience since Norv Turner. They hired Mike McCoy, who was a coordinator. They hired Anthony Lynn, who had one game as interim coach, was really a coordinator. And then they hired Brandon Staley, who was a coordinator. The best seasons this century for the Chargers have come with coaches with experience. You go back to Marty Schottenheimer, who had head coaching experience, and then Norv Turner. Since then, though, they've gone with young guys. Now, some of that could be like a financial thing, where obviously if you go after, up and coming coordinators, you don't have to pay the same as you would for somebody with a lot of experience. But it feels like the Chargers would be trending more towards, hey, we need experience. We need somebody who's been there. We need somebody who's a proven winner. We need somebody who's going to be able to hold people accountable, who's going to have that kind of cachet when as soon as they walk in the building. Washington, meanwhile, is probably looking in a different direction because they just did that and it didn't really work out. So I think the juxtaposition is kind of interesting there.
It's funny, when you're a fan of a team, recovery team, you associate certain other teams with your team because of some prior connections. I never think of the Chargers, but you just said Norv Turner and Marty Schottenheimer, who are back-to-back coaches here. Not
There
to
you
mention
go.
Ron Rivera himself was a coordinator with the Chargers back in the day. It's funny. Everybody wants the hot coordinator, right? Everybody wants that because it's new, it's fresh, you don't know, it could be amazing. And I will always like, look, you're asking this person to do a job they don't currently do. Even if whoever it is, Ben Johnson or anybody, still calls plays, they now have these other responsibilities. And in lately, the guy who's in my head whenever I think of this is Brandon Staley. Because I mean, as I'm sure you know, and maybe you even wrote some of these things, but there was a lot of praise for Brandon Staley coming out of coming away from the Rams about this guy's sees the game in a great way and this, that, and the other. And then obviously, I wrote your story about what went wrong, and he just couldn't translate what he was doing as a coordinator to the coach. And that we'll be having that conversation here in a few weeks if they do in fact go down this coordinator route for sure.
It's just not the same job. Like, it's not the same job in any way, shape, or form. And I spent the last 3 weeks, you talked about sort of like what's it been like as far as sort of like, gearing up for the coaching search. And one thing I did was I asked a lot of players in the locker room, because I'm curious now, because like I always thought it was like, go get the smartest guy. Like, go get the smartest guy, and that's gonna be your best chance to have a successful head coach. I've changed my approach, and obviously that was not correct, because Brandon Staley is a hyper intelligent human being, and it didn't translate. And so, like, my hypothesis as far as what the most important trait was wrong. So I went around and I asked guys, like you guys know what it looks like you know what it feels like to have a good head coach. What are the traits? And one player brought up an interesting scenario where it's like he kind of said, like, there's this spectrum, right, between players coach and accountability coach. And the best coaches are the ones that can do both, that can toe the line, that can find that balance. And if you, but if you don't have like accountability, real accountability, then when things start going wrong, they're going to go really, really wrong. And that's probably what happened here. And so, like, you know, you have to think about the job differently. And I think like that's a mistake that a lot of teams make is like, let's go get the guy that's calling the plays for the best unit in football. Those are the guys that end up getting the opportunities. In reality, though, that doesn't translate. Like, and you're trying to find leadership. How do you define that? Like, it is very nebulous. Like, how do you define somebody that's going to be a good leader? And I think it's funny because like you look at Dan Campbell, right? Who on earth thought that he was going to turn this thing around after his first press conference?
Right.
Right? Nobody. The kneecap thing, everyone wrote him off, but that guy obviously is able to lead. Like he's obviously able to galvanize. And I think one thing is that he does is going back to that spectrum idea, like he clearly is able to balance that spectrum, right? And hold players accountable while also developing these very real relationships with players. And so like that, if I was going into an interview with the head coach, that's what I'm talking about. Like I'm not talking about, you know, show me your scheme, you know, show me what worked as a play caller. Like I'm not focusing on any of that stuff. It's important, but like good leaders can find people to do that. There are plenty of very smart coaches that can coach X's and O's and lead a good unit. There are very few coaches that can lead and find that balance between, you know, accountability and then being that like, you know, that having that rapport with the players.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, we'll talk about Ben Johnson in a second, and you know, who knows? He may be the next Bill Walsh. What do I know? But the idea that everybody's wants him because of what he's done with the Lions, I'm like, okay, but has he led a locker room? Has he had to deal with all the responsibilities that come with a head coach? You know, I'm sure he has to make some quick decisions late in games, but it's still different when you're the guy who's got final say on all of these things. I mean, who knows how you react. And yeah, I mean, again, we mentioned Norv Turner. When Washington hired him back in the day, he was just coming off the Super Bowls with Dallas, where he's the offensive coordinator for Troy Aikman, Emmitt Smith, and Michael Irvin. And then he gets here, and you know, I'm not saying he was like the worst coach ever, and I think he had more success ultimately with the Chargers, but you could kind of just tell he was not a leader of men in the way we think about it. You don't have to be some alpha like Dan Campbell is or Bill Cowher, but at the same point, like, you know, it just didn't feel like it was a great fit, but obviously he's a tremendous coordinator. And you know, then I also think about like John Harbaugh. Like he was a special teams coach, and typically that's not a spot that people target, but obviously he's a unique case in that he came from this football family, and clearly the DNA there worked out pretty well for everybody involved. But yeah, the leadership component cannot be ignored, even if you're like, I gotta fix this offense. Like, there is more than just that. It is the tone and tenor of the team, how you go about your business, people be on their P's and Q's and everything. And it can be tricky, for sure. Before I go to the coaches, Adam Peters, has that been a name at all for you, or
Yeah,
since you're at
they requested an interview with him, so that'll happen at some point. I think this week Matt Barrows reported that it was supposed to be our 49ers writer, so it was supposed to be sometime this week. I think it's a consideration. You know, again though, like if it's Harbaugh, right? Like I think that's kind of how I'm framing every like when I'm looking at every candidate. Like if it's Harbaugh, would it work? Right? I don't think they're married to it. Like I think they are really running these two searches concurrently. You know, they just did an interview today with Brandon Brown, the assistant GM for the Giants. And so, like, I think he's going to be a real consideration. The question is, could they pair him with Harbaugh? Like, would that work? They didn't cross paths in San Francisco, but they obviously know a lot of the same people. You know, I think, you know, Adam Peters was sort of in line to, you know, get a promotion to GM in San Francisco with John Lynch getting, you know, promoted to more of like a VP director of personnel role. But, you know, Matt Barrows wrote a story today that, you know, Lynch is still really going to be running things. So even if Peters gets a promotion, he's not going to have real control over the personnel department. So, you know, the Chargers job could be appealing in that sense. Obviously, like what San Francisco has done as far as building a roster, there are not many teams in the league that compare to them. I think like the Ravens are, you know, an example, the Eagles maybe, but like outside of that, there aren't a whole lot of teams. So, you know, I think definitely consideration. They'll do an interview with him and we'll sort of see, you know, how the Harbaugh thing shakes out and if those two would actually be a legitimate pairing.
All right, fair enough. All right, let's go to the coaches. You know, again, because Washington has been pretty obvious they were going to make a change for a while. Then the Chargers, before the season ended, got in the mix. You know, the Raiders did some of that as well, but their situation was, you know, their interims have done really well. So people have, I mean, obviously they think about it, but it feels like they could just they may already have their answers in the building. So the big name this coaching cycle, at least before Bill Belichick officially entered the picture today, was is Ben Johnson, the OC with the Lions. And every team is going to be associated with him, but it has felt to me like it's been a Washington or Chargers situation. Washington because it's kind of this blank slate, and the Chargers because Justin Herbert is pretty good and a guy that people would want to develop, have somebody, you know, help and work with. Give me your sales pitch if you're talking to Ben Johnson, why the Chargers? Not why not, but what why is the Chargers, do you think, you know, saying why is it the best situation for a guy like him if he's really looking to make a move?
Yeah. I mean, you have to start with Justin Herbert. Like I think having Justin Herbert already signed to a long-term deal, like he signed through his age 31 season through 2029, like you know that guy's going to be here and you know he's good enough to win a Super Bowl and like that you have that leg up over, you know, everybody else that has a coaching opening. I think you start there, but you can sort of move down the list, right? Like you talk about the building blocks that the Chargers really have. They got Justin Herbert, they have a franchise left tackle and Rashawn Slater, who, when healthy, is a top five tackle in the league. He's extension eligible this offseason. But so those you talk about like the two most important pieces on an offense. You have those two. On the other side of the ball, you have Tuli Tupelotu, who's one of the best rookies in the league this year. I think he's going to be like an ace edge rusher, like, you know, top 10, 15 type guy in the league. You know, he showed signs of that this year. I think he sort of, you know, hit the rookie wall. Which is normal. His pressure rate was about 5% higher, you know, before like week 11. You know, Joey Bosa getting hurt kind of impacted that too, because he kind of had to move into a number two role. I think he's ready to be that number one guy. And so you talk about like those are like the three guys that's your pitch as far as building blocks. And you're talking about, you know, the three most important positions. They don't have a corner. They have Asante Samuel Jr., who's I think more of a number two. You know, he's plays like his dad. Like he goes and gets the football, but he's prone to some mistakes. He's not a great tackler. So yeah, you have three building blocks there at very, very important positions. But you start with Justin Herbert, right? Like I think the opportunity to come in and cultivate a good offense, that opportunity, the quickest way to do that is with the Chargers versus anywhere else because you have the quarterback and that would be, you know, my pitch to Ben Johnson. What I will say is like I know there's going to be interest there. Like I kind of like tiered the candidates. And Ben Johnson would be in the tier one candidates for the Chargers. I think it's Harbaugh. I think it's Dan Quinn. I think it's Ben Johnson. I think it's Belichick. I would throw Vrabel in there now, even though it seems like a done deal that he's going to New England. And then even Pete Carroll. So like that's kind of what I'm looking at tier one. But as far as guys without co head coaching experience, he's the only guy that I would put in tier one. And I think you can go back to the Chargers Lions game in week 10, where Ben Johnson dropped 41 points on Brandon Staley's defense. And the way he did it was really important. Like, I don't think it was just the fact that he put up that number. He was just very clearly one step ahead of Brandon Staley. I mean, he ran a successful run on third and five for a conversion. Like, every time Brandon Staley tried to do something schematically, Ben Johnson was one step ahead and he just had his way. And I think that definitely opened some eyes because Chargers ownership was at that game at SoFi as far as like what he's capable of as an offensive play caller. So, there's interest there, and I think the pitch obviously starts with Justin Herbert, and then secondarily having, you know, a franchise left tackle with a ton of upside is another intriguing thing for any offensive coach.
Well, I mean, from the positive standpoint, we'll get to the negatives for both teams in a second. You know, it is a fascinating look between what the Chargers have and Washington's have. From a building blocks perspective, they don't have any of the things that you just said. No quarterback, offensive line needs big repairs. They have two defensive tackles who have been good, but no pass rusher, and the two defensive tackles are coming off down years for them. No cornerback. They need all the core positions you can possibly have. But they have the number two pick, $90 million in cap space, give or take. They have not just the number two pick, they have nine picks total, five in the top 100, and a new owner who isn't Dan Snyder. So the moment just momentum
That's a
from
big
that.
one. That's a big one.
Yeah. So it's such an incredible blank slate versus hey, we got these pieces already. Now it's just a matter of making it to another level. Obviously, you're more familiar with the Chargers, but just based on that, if you're looking at this as an executive, which one do you think is more interesting? The some of the key building blocks already in place, or like I said, this kind of blank slate, you can kind of jump in and do whatever you want.
Yeah, if I'm an executive, I'm going to the spot that has the quarterback and has the deal done. Like that's, I think that's like a big part of it. Like it's not like, you know, you're going to pay market rate. It's like, it kind of is what it is, but I think like that's really attractive. Like I've watched every game Justin Herbert has played. I know he had a down season. He broke his finger in week 3. He didn't finish the season because he broke his right index finger. The guy's incredible. Like he is good enough to win a Super Bowl and he can lead you there, you know, and he can be that type of guy. I know there's been a lot of talk about him, you know, clutch late in games. I think a lot of that is overstated. If you look at like, you know, the full body of work and the full sample size, like his rate is, you know, more middle of the pack than, you know, I think how people sort of view him as like not coming up in these moments. And some of it too this year was like protection breakdowns, you know, where, you know, they're getting beat schematically, you know, with pressure looks late in games. So I put more of that on Kellen Moore than I do, you know, on Justin Herbert. So like, you know, to me, like a franchise that has that guy, that has a stud quarterback, like that's got to be most attractive for a coach. That's got to be most attractive for a GM. And then the icing on the cake is that he's signed long term. You don't have to, you know, negotiate that contract. Now, it does, like, I guess, in a sense, hamstring you, right? Because you do have to be more creative as far as how you build the roster. And so, like, that is a point to make, right? Like, if you are an executive, do you want the guy, do you want to start with the quarterback that's already on the long term market rate deal? Or would you rather, you know, take your chance on a rookie that you can have on a rookie deal? You know, Justin Herbert is good, proven product.
Right.
You know, what are the chances that, you know, Drake May, Jaden Daniels ends up being as good as Justin Herbert? You know, I think we've seen in the history of the league that, you know, drafting quarterbacks high is a complete crapshoot. But, you know, a lot of these executives believe in themselves and maybe they look at it and say, hey, I know I'm going to be able to get the quarterback and I'd rather have the guy on the rookie deal. For me personally, I just have seen what Justin Herbert has done. I know he's good enough. He signed long term. That's where I'm going if I'm an executive, and then find a way to build around him.
I forgot to mention when I said connections between the two organizations, a lot of lamenting here the past 3+ years that Washington took Chase Young instead of taking Justin Herbert or Tua. That's a whole other strata. I give Washington a minor pass because they just drafted Dwayne Haskins and Dan Snyder wanted him and all that. But yes, yet another
connection. I think connection. That's a fine process though. Like I think like at number two, like, you know, taking an edge rusher that you believe is going to be a really good player. And like, listen, nobody thought Chase Young was not going to pan out into at least like a really quality edge rusher. You know, right. Obviously injuries were a factor. So like, I'm okay with that process. Like, as long as you're prioritizing positional value and you're taking, you know, corner, edge, receiver, something like that, where you feel like that guy can make a difference. Like, I'm okay with that process. And, you know, Justin Herbert wasn't even the second quarterback taken. So.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, it's we've talked about it a ton over the years, and I always said, like, for a variety of reasons, I give them a pass, partly because we said that Chase Young was viewed as, you know, a legit, you know, potential star, let alone at least a solid, a pretty good player. And for a variety of reasons, it didn't work out. All right, but let's go back to this sort of comparison. So I already mentioned Washington's big issue is the roster is kind of bare, so you're kind of starting from ground zero. The Chargers, you mentioned Herbert's money. It seems like the issue that people are talking about is the salary cap, that there's a lot of money invested in just a few players. How detrimental is that? Is that really an issue? And how would that, if you're, again, like our Ben Johnson coming in, how do you think that affects somebody trying to decide, you know, where they'd want to go?
Yeah. So I don't want to give away too much here because I'm doing like a whole breakdown of how I would approach the cap situation for Tuesday next week. But I'll give sort of like a surface level sort of breakdown of what's going on. So last offseason, they restructured 4 contracts. Joey Bosa, Khalil Mack, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams. They pushed a ton of money into 2024. Mack, Allen, Williams, all entering the last year of their deals. They all have cap hits of at least $32 million. The 4 of them together will have cap hits, a collective cap hit of, you know, $142.4 million. The total cap is projected at $242 million, according to Over the Cap. So you're talking about 4 players taking up well over 50%. Of your total cap. That's not tenable. So like
it is in the NBA, not in the NFL. No.
So all 4 of those guys are not going to be here next year. So, but it's not like a death sentence. You know, I think like a smart, savvy exec will be able to come in, look at this and say, okay, like we need to tear this thing down. we need to take our lumps next season as far as dead money, and then we'll be free to sort of build this thing, as long as we have a quality draft class of 2024 to sort of build this thing, you know, the way we want to heading into 2025. And you add in that they have the fifth overall pick. And so, you know, how they go about that, I think different executives would look at it differently. You know, my sense is that ownership wants to, you know, rip the Band-Aid off. I think that is the smartest approach. And I'll dive into that in the story that I'm going to on Tuesday. But you also have the option to extend, right? Like, you can cut and trade to save cap space. You can also extend to save cap space. So how does the future GM or head coach, if that's the person making the decision, feel about Keenan Allen and potentially extending him? Keenan was on pace for the best season of his career this year, still ended up one of the best seasons of his career, even though he missed the final four games, set the single season catch record for the Chargers this season. He's obviously got good football left. You know, I think I would pivot to building more team speed in the receiver room, because that's what they've been missing. You know, when you have a top two tandem of Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, like, you are lacking speed, like speed that will really threaten a defense. And that's come up a lot in terms of how the Chargers have played. So you could extend him. Khalil Mack is coming off, you know, one of, if not the best seasons of his career. 17 sacks, obviously, but he was tremendous against the run this year. You could also extend him. But I think the best way to go about it is get as much value on the trade market as you can for Keenan, get as much value on the trade market as you can for Khalil, cut Mike Williams just because he's coming off an ACL and you're probably not going to be able to find a trade partner there. And then, you know, and I would shop Joey Bosa as well. And if you can get out of all four of those contracts, you know, you're talking about probably anywhere from $50 to $70 million in dead money. Not ideal. You're wasting effectively the age 26 season of Justin Herbert. You know, I still think they'll probably be competitive just because the quarterback's really good. But you sort of take your lumps in 24. You have the fifth overall pick. Maybe you bring in a Malik Nabers and add some juice to that receiver room. And then you can really get this thing rolling in 2025. So, like, I don't think it's debilitating. You know, I think the moves that they made last offseason was always going to lead to this. Like, they either had to, like, you know, pay the piper last year and move on from one of these guys, or give it one more run with the current iteration of the roster and then really take your lumps in 2024. And that's, to me, what this offseason is going to be about. Like, if anyone, like, if a GM comes into an interview, if I was ownership and they came in and they were talking about, you know, finding ways to, like, keep this, you know, nucleus together and keep Mack and Allen and Williams and Bosa, I would end the interview right there. I'd be like, no, we need somebody who's thinking, you know, 2-3 years down the road of how we rebuild this thing, and then in year two of the new regime really have a chance to contend.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on the at some point you gotta pay the piper, and you gotta decide strategically when's the best time to do it for what you're trying to accomplish. Right. Going forward, I don't know if this is the speed that you're talking about, but Marvin Harrison Jr. is obviously considered the best receiver in this draft, probably a top four pick. If you're saying the Chargers hypothetically move on from, say, Williams and could use a more dynamic receiver, is there any world they would say hit to Washington, perhaps, hey, we're willing to move up from 5 to 2 and give you some stuff because Marvin Harrison is a generational talent, that, you know, one of the best receiver in the last prospect in the last decade or so. Does that move the needle for you at all?
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't throw him out there because I'm sort of operating under the premise that, you know, they'll sit at 5 and take whoever's there.
Cause I would think the Cardinals at 4 would take him, right? That seems,
well, that's to be the question. You know, like, some people think it could be 4 quarterbacks in the top 4.
I've Who's heard the 4th quarterback?
Penix or JJ McCarthy at 4, you know, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but, like, right, you know, a lot of it depends on what the Cardinals think about Kyler Murray, right? Like, is he the dude, or do they feel like they need to reset their quarterback wise, or does somebody trade in there? You know, like, I would be surprised. Now, again, like, I'm saying this and I have no idea who's going to be making the decisions, right? Like, so a lot of that depends on who they hire and who's making these decisions, right? I would be surprised. I think there's going to be a really, really good player there at 5, whether it's, you know, one of these tackles or one of these receivers. So, like, I would be surprised. But then again, like, they go hire somebody that has a track record of being super aggressive, like, that changes, obviously, the conversation.
That's funny. You saying it, a lot depends on who's going to be there, who's going to run the team. I know what it feels like to be on the other end of that, asking the question, because I get it all the time. I'm like, I don't know who's running the team. How am I going to address what they might want at quarterback or anything along those lines until I know that. All right, let's get to so I guess at this point, with regards to Ben Johnson, does it feel like Harbaugh is the leading candidate, but Johnson is 1B to the 1A. Is that ultimately how you would see it right
Yeah,
now?
I don't want to. I don't necessarily want to go there and say that Harbaugh's like the leading candidate. I think they're interested in Harbaugh. I think
Because
they're
the
interested.
Raiders are in play for him too, right? That's the other one.
Yeah, and Harbaugh got his coaching start as, you know, quarterbacks coach for the Raiders in 2002 after he finished his playing career. So the way I'm framing it is like I think there is a tier one of candidates, and I don't think anybody has distanced themselves within that first tier. You know, the guys I threw out, right? Like Harbaugh, Ben Johnson, Dan Quinn. I'd throw Belichick in there, and I'd throw Vrabel in there. Like if I was running the show, that's probably the guy that I would go for. Now, you know, there was a lot of speculation that this was all in the works, you know, 2.5 weeks ago, right? That Vrabel was going to be out in Tennessee, Belichick was going to be out in New England, Vrabel was going to go to New England. Like I've been hearing that, you know, for a while. I don't know about you, but like that's I wasn't necessarily surprised to see that all go down. And so like I would make a run at Vrabel, but I think like I would be really surprised if he doesn't end up in New England. But I would throw like those guys. And I think the fascinating part about this cycle is like, and I don't know, you've been covering the league longer than I have. Like, I don't know. I can't remember a coaching cycle where there's this many qualified candidates with experience and success at the NFL level. Like, I just can't remember a situation where there are this many guys. Now, some of them are older. You're talking about 270 plus guys and Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick, but like you throw out some of these names and it's like these are guys with proven track records of winning. And then you also bring Jim Harbaugh into the mix, right? And so, you know, it's interesting because that's where I feel like the Chargers are headed, right? Like, I think they want experience. I think they want someone with a proven track record. I think they want somebody who's going to walk into the locker room and have that respect from day one, not have to earn anything because of what they've done in the league, right? I always thought Dan Quinn, that's why I have him in tier one. You know, obviously not like a super, not as much success as these other guys, but he took a team to the Super Bowl and he's done a great job in Dallas with that defense. But again, like the speculation was out there that Pete Carroll was, you know, might retire or whatever in Seattle. And that if that happened, that Dan Quinn was probably heading there. So do the Chargers really have a chance in there? But so, like, that's sort of how I would prefer to frame it is I think there's like a tier one group that the Chargers would aggressively pursue and just as importantly pay for, you know, financially. And then after that, I think you have a ton of guys that are sort of in the mix if they do miss out on some of those tier one guys, you know, Steve Wilks, Todd Monken, you know, Frank Smith. You can sort of Frank Smith, a former Chargers coach, you know, I think a lot of those guys are in the mix. But what, like, again, like, I think you can sort of sort through those candidates and be like, all right, who has experience? You know, Wilkes is an interesting guy to me. Only got 1 year in Arizona, but obviously a lot of good things, you know, coming out of Carolina when he was the intern there. So I would say tier one and then sort of everybody else. And I wouldn't really like, you know, pinpoint like a specific leader in the clubhouse right now, so to say.
Yeah, I mean Belichick is such the wild, such a weird wild card because on the one hand, the recent years have not been good. On the other hand, he's Bill Belichick. Everybody wants to send him here, yet I've been told over and over that that's not a thing happening. It doesn't make any sense for where this team is at. But if he doesn't go to Atlanta, which seems like the hot play, I don't know where he's going exactly. That makes a ton of sense because obviously, typically, if you're looking for a new coach, you're probably not very good, and his goal is to break the wins record, and I'm sure he's the one to take 6 years to get there. That's going to be another wild card to
I think you're right. I don't know. Like the one, I think Atlanta is the only one. Like the other one I was considering about, you know, obviously, like again, like I was ahead of this three weeks to sort of, you know, talk to people and figure out what the landscape was going to look like. I heard the Giants thrown out for Belichick, but it doesn't seem like they're going to be moving on from Daboll at this point. Obviously, there was a like I think there was a lot of murmurs about stuff happening behind the scenes there about, you know, people not getting along, Daboll rubbing people the wrong way. A lot of that stuff's kind of trickling out now with Wink Martindale resigning and all of that stuff, but it seems like they're going to stick with him. So, you know, Atlanta feels like the one. You know, again, it's the same sort of situation when you get these types of candidates, though. It's like, you know, is Belichick going to want personnel control? You know, is he going to want $25 million a year, or is it a situation where he just wants to break Shula's record and, you know, would negotiate all of that, take less money, and give up control to have a chance to coach Justin Herbert, win some ball games? Like that feels like a realistic scenario from the Chargers side, but is it realistic for Belichick? Is he willing to make those kinds of concessions?
And it's not like Atlanta has a quarterback, right? I mean, ultimately, their defense is pretty good. They obviously have some playmakers. I'm a quarterback, so he just went through this the last few years. with New England. So who knows if that's even as attractive to him as we're, you know, sort of the public at large kind of making it out to be. All right. You have been rock awesome. I've kept you too long already. And you live in Southern California. You need to be outside. You need to be going doing things.
Agreed.
Yeah. At Daniel R. Popper on Twitter. Anything else people need to know about? Obviously, you can find you on The Athletic. Anything else?
Find me on The Athletic. Next week, gonna be diving into, my 10-step plan for fixing this roster. So that'll be out on Tuesday. And yeah, check out my work there.
All right, cool. Well, I'll send this audio to Ben Johnson and his agent so they know, you know, the pros and cons of each situation. Now, I'm sure they haven't thought about these things yet. You rock, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ben.
All right. Now, as I said, I'm going to talk a little bit here about the playoffs just because obviously this is what we all like to do, right? Make some predictions. Let's go here. Starting in order of the games, Browns, Texans. Browns a 2-point favorite in Houston. This is Saturday at 4:30 p.m. on NBC. Typically, I would be like, well, if I'm getting a home team getting some points in the playoffs and they have a pretty good quarterback, that seems like a way to go. Obviously, CJ Stroud has had a phenomenal rookie season. And, you know, the Texans have looked good. The Browns, meanwhile, have an outrageously good defense this year. And Joe Flacco is wildly impressive with what he's done in his incredible comeback over the last month. He's also a guy that has historically thrived in the postseason. I did see that Browns cornerback Denzel Ward suffered an injury in practice this week, and they lowered him to questionable. If he's off the field, that does take away some of their defensive prowess. And the Flacco thing, it's just like, man, is this going to keep going? I guess I'm going to say that it will. I don't know if I'm predicting a particularly high score this week, but I'm going to say I'll take the Browns. I'll go 20-13 Cleveland over Houston. That's probably too low scoring, but it feels like that kind of game, so I'm going to lean into that. So Browns 20-13 over Houston. The night game tomorrow, Dolphins-Chiefs, Chiefs minus 4.5. Apparently, there is this insane cold temperatures on tap for Kansas City. We know how across the country right now it has been, the weather has been brutal for so many people, and it looks like Kansas City is going to be hit for sure. There are so many matchups that have rivalry components, or there's some, or maybe not rivalry, but there's like an intrigue there. This one, Tyreek Hill facing his old team in his old stadium. You know, Miami has been a juggernaut this year offensively for the most part, but things have cooled off a little bit in part because of injuries, but the defense has really suffered blows, losing their two top pass rushers. They were out signing like random veterans this week off the street just to give them some more boost. It's not like Kansas City has been flying either offensively. They have been stuck in the mud most of the time, for sure. But their defense has been pretty solid. It is at home. The 4.5 makes me a little nervous, especially with the weather. If field goals become complicated, then maybe that's a take the points thing. But, man, to go from Miami to, you know, what they're saying could be one of the coldest start time temperatures recorded in NFL history, I guess I'm going to go with the Chiefs. The over-under is 43.5. Give me Kansas City 24-19. Can we do that? 24-19 Chiefs? All right, we'll do that. Sunday, three games. First up, Steelers at Bills, Buffalo minus 10. That is a lot of points in a playoff game. The Bills have been hot, though. They were being counted out, earlier in the season, and then they rally back with a strong finish to win the AFC East. Pittsburgh, because this is what Mike Tomlin does. He finds ways to get his team over 500, and they found their way into the playoffs. The Steelers are always a tough out because they always show up to play. And again, 10 points is a lot here, and there is going to be a weather component in Buffalo as well. I'm probably a little bit, I guess I'm going to go, I'm definitely going to say Buffalo wins. I'll give the points. Again, I feel like this is too many points, but I don't know if I'm trusting Mason Rudolph to lead Pittsburgh into to keeping up offensively. So give me the Bills 27-13. Josh Allen, you know, I feel like he's not getting discussed enough for the MVP. I think he's had ultimately a really good year. Sure, there's some definite obvious down moments, some turnovers. He was at least second to Sam Howell in interceptions going into the last week of the year. But give me the Bills. You know, they're going to be, they'll both teams will obviously be used to the weather, but at home, I think the Bills get it done. All right. The next game, Packers at Cowboys. Cowboys -7. You know, kudos to Green Bay. You know, this is the first year without Aaron Rodgers. You know, look, obviously, who knows what would have happened for Rodgers and the Jets if Rodgers stays healthy. He only lasted, what, 4 plays? But, you know, Jordan Love looks like they've got a quarterback there in Green Bay. You know, this is a team that has had, you know, they've been in the playoffs pretty much every year, you know, under head coach Matt LaFleur. The Cowboys have been a little more up and down, but they are very, very good at home. I'm probably going to regret this, but I'm going to take Green Bay and the points, but give me Dallas and the win. Cowboys win 27-21. That's what I got there. Next one, Rams Lions. This is another fun one because you have, of course, Matthew Stafford going up against his old team, Jared Goff going up against his old team. The Lions GM Brad Holmes was with the Rams previously, so there's a lot of back and forth here. Look, the Lions have been one of the stories of the NFL season, right? I mean, they have come out and been a contender from the start, which is obviously pretty rare territory for a franchise that has just continually been out of the mix, the contender mix, for decades, other than a few spot years here and there. And there's a lot of reason to be excited about them. That's why people are enamored with the idea of landing Ben Johnson as the as a new head coach. That said, I do not want to face the Rams right now. The Rams have been crazy hot. I think they've won 6 of their last 7 games. They finished 10-7. And, you know, Stafford, obviously, he's won a Super Bowl. He's not. I don't see him being intimidated being back in Detroit. Aaron Donald, he's not had a Superman type year, but he's still, you know, one of the best players in the league. The Rams have the great wide receiver combo from this year with Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp. And, you know, their defensive coordinator, Raheem Morris, has really worked wonders this year. This is not a particularly overtly talented group, but he has found ways to get them going. And then, of course, Sean McVay, who has, you know, done a really good coaching job this year, because this Rams team, you know, after they had to sort of purge the roster from the F Them Picks teams to, you know, and they took some hits this year with the salary cap. I like the Rams. I don't just like them to cover getting the 3. I like them to just outright win. I understand it's going to be maybe a little bit nuts, but that's my upset of the weekend. So give me the Rams over the Lions 31-28. Rams over the Lions. Upset there, and you know, in what could be the final game for Ben Johnson with Detroit. Last game on Monday, Eagles at Bucks. This is one of those deals where the team with the better record in Philadelphia is on the road because they're the wild card while the Bucks won the division. The Eagles are favored by 3. Wow, have they been a mess of late. They are kind of falling apart, it feels like, all over the place. You know, and it does give some pause back. We go back to look at those 2 Washington games where Washington's offense really, you know, hung some points up on the Eagles, and both games were down to the wire before the Eagles held on. And, you know, we viewed that at that time as a good sign for Washington, when the reality ultimately was the Eagles were just not as close to being a championship level team as they appeared. That said, this is a group that made the Super Bowl last year. You still got a lot of talented players on both sides. There was today, A.J. Brown missed practice. Jalen Hurts is banged up as well. But Baker Mayfield's been banged up for Tampa
on that side. So all that said, it's not like I'm feeling pretty confident in Tampa. I think I'm gonna have to take the Bucks. Yeah, I'm gonna take the Bucks 20-17. I guess this isn't, I guess I have more than one upset here. The Bucks are, it's at home, and they're, you know, they're not playing great, but they're playing better than the Eagles. And I just don't know if I see the Eagles turning this around. At a minimum, I don't see the Eagles, you know, getting too much further than this round. But I'm gonna go for the upset straight off the bat. Tampa Bay 20, what did I say? 20-17 over the Eagles. So there you go. Some random picks that you should definitely not follow. I've not been on my game this year, but you know, we're gonna play it out and see what happens. All right, that's it for now. Again, we'll be on top of all of the GM and coach search moves and announcements, and you know, keep plugged in, because this thing could get wrapped up any day. I would assume it'll be next week, beginning of next week, but who knows? We'll see what happens. For now, that is it. Ben Standick signing off. Until next time. See ya.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.